Hello, it is March 1st, 2016. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 548 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. We are back to our baseball season preview edition. We're actually going to have two podcasts this week. I'm talking to Allison Footer. We'll be previewing the NL West as well as talking about the rule changes, which I think are a bigger deal than people are letting on. So we'll discuss that as well. Also, later on this week, we will have Howard Megdal, who is the author of the new book, The Cardinal Way, just by tweeting out a link to that podcast, will get me yelled at on Twitter. I'm prepared for that already. Also, please rate and review us on iTunes, as always. But this is Allison Footer. Now, there's one last piece of housekeeping I have to do. My son is sitting right next to me, and he needs to take a nap today. And I promised him, he's always listening to Daddy in the other room doing podcasts, and he can't come in. The door's shut. You know how four-year-olds think about doors being shut. So I promised him if he takes a nap today, he could talk on the podcast. So, William?
Hello, everybody.
Okay. Are you going to take a nap today? All right. Good job. Okay. Say goodbye to everybody. All right. This is the Will Leach Experience podcast. Here is me and Allison Footer. I hope I don't have to. I think I just have to pay him scale for that, right? That's usually how it works. It's not. He's non-union. You're non-union. All right. Here's Allison. All right, Allison. You are at. You're at spring training. I'm just in my house. You're at spring training. How is it so far? How was photo day? Are you having fun?
It was good. The last photo day is always a little bit of a celebration just because, you know, as we were talking about last time, it's very labor intensive. I was thrilled that I woke up this morning and the sun was already up. So that was that was fun. So, we got it all done and everybody was like amazingly compliant. The teams were fantastic to work with. And now we can go on with the rest of our lives.
We are taping on Monday morning. I write every day for Sports on Earth, as you probably know. And I wrote one of my favorite Sports on Earth pieces in a while on Friday. It was about how the Philadelphia Phillies lost their preseason game last year to the University of Tampa. And it's the first time it had happened since 2010. And they got a rematch. We've already had one spring training game on Sunday afternoon. The Phillies got their revenge. They got their revenge, and they defeated the University of Tampa. Pete Mackanin, who's the new Phillies manager, who seems like kind of a cool guy. I've never talked to that guy, but I've certainly in interviews he seems entertaining anyway. In a non very uptight Mike Matheny-esque manager way, he seems kind of fun.
And so he's
in the interview because Jeremy Hellickson was starting the game. He's like, we're going to learn a lot about Hellickson coming into this game and whether or not he can get the appropriate revenge necessary. It's a big game and we're prepared. And I'm proud to say the Phillies took a 3-0 lead. It became 4-3, got tight for a moment, but they did exact their revenge over the University of Tampa. So the point is, baseball games are happening. Baseball games are the Mets don't play today, right? I think today is that day where the Red Sox play college teams from Boston.
Mets aren't playing today. And it's just funny because like a lot of teams have intra-squad games.
Yes.
And, you know, at this point, like reporters have been here like 2 weeks and everyone's sort of looking for something different to be going on rather than like morning drills, bullpens, batting practice. And so when the manager reveals like who's going to pitch in the Pirates, you know, who's going to pitch in their intra-squad black and gold game, I guess that's what they call, like everyone just gets really excited because it's just something else to talk about.
There's a sporting event.
There'll be an intra-squad game where teammates will play each other and hopefully no one gets hurt. And then they'll play a lot of exhibition games and then they'll play more and then they'll still play more. And then the opening day will be here someday.
Someday, a long way away. We still have the whole NCAA tournament to get through first. We are 2 weeks away from even deciding who's going to be in it. So it's a long way to go. But the big news this week, we're going to talk about the NL West. We're going to do our previewing a division each week. We're doing the NL West later, but the first thing I think we need to talk about were there were some rule changes this week, and there were two big ones, I guess three big ones, but two of them are connected. The first is the big news is really basically what's happened with the takeout slide and the neighborhood play. Now, on one hand, I think I was not as enraged by the Chase Utley thing as everyone else was. I thought it was crappy. I think he was clearly – I don't think he was trying to hurt him. I just think he was trying to knock him out of the way with force, which I think is – frankly, it's a little different. I think that there's a difference between trying to actively hurt someone and trying to – you know, run into them in a way that knocks them completely out of your way. I feel like those are two different things. But either way, it's clear that was one of the moments you're like, okay, that's not really what baseball is.
Right.
So,
well,
so we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't have that. But so they fixed that. So first off, and we'll get to the next part after that that's connected to it. But are you happy with the move that they've made to try to get rid of the takeout slide?
I am, and I want to say just on an added note to the Chase Utley comment is that, no, he wasn't trying to hurt him, but the path that he took and the actions that he took increased the chances that he was going to hurt him.
I agree with that.
Yeah, in those 3 seconds, he's not saying, like, I want to break his leg, but he needs to understand, and everyone needs to understand, that when you do that to that extreme and you go out of the way that much, the chances are you're going to break something. And so, yeah, I'm completely fine with the fact that they revised this rule and implemented something. And I just
Do you still think he should have been suspended? I don't think he should have been suspended.
Oh, yeah, I think that was a knee-jerk reaction, no pun intended, but also trying to protect him from any kind of revenge in the next couple of games. So, looking back on that, I mean, at the time, I really agreed with it because I was just so mad. I just get so
mad. Everyone was so mad.
Like
everyone was so mad. I know. Everyone was so mad. But, like, now, the fact that this rule had to be changed is a pretty solid proof that he shouldn't have been suspended, because it was proof that it was legal, and now we're making it illegal.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Should he have been suspended for something that was clearly legal at the time? Probably not. I mean, that's a very good point. But the fact of the matter is, and also I want to say that I was at Pirates camp the day that this news broke, and we interviewed a lot of the Pirates players, and Josh Harrison had a really good point. He said he was very much in favor, of course, of these new rules being implemented. But he said, you know, there's life after baseball, and it would be nice if we were able to live our lives after baseball without having any kind of physical, you know, setbacks and ramifications because of something that happened in our careers that didn't need to happen. And I thought that was great, because we need more players like him to step up and say stuff like that, because this whole, like, there's an older generation that goes, the wussification of America, the wussification of our sport. And I get kind of tired of hearing that. It's like, no, actually, guys don't need to get concussions and have problems later in life. And maybe you can see some of the retired catchers that are walking around that can barely walk because of the 18 knee surgeries they have. And, you know, things happen in your career. But if you can prevent something, you know, catastrophic from happening, then I think it should.
Yeah. There's a certain Trump tweet vibe to that wussification of America. Now, why are we so worried about this vibe? Sad sort of thing to it. But I do think that I'm glad they've changed the rule. I still think it was ridiculous that Utley was suspended. I don't think Utley's a particularly likable guy. I also think it's weird that we would suspend a guy because we don't trust our security people to not have him get hurt in the middle of a game. But whatever, it all happened. It all turned out well. I don't think the Dodgers would have won that series if Chase Utley would have played those two games. So it doesn't all really matter. But the second part of this is the part that I am concerned about, which is, and this comes back to we've discussed this before, my overarching frustration with replay. And what this comes out, it looks like this year the neighborhood play is going to be reviewable by replay. Now, which basically means the neighborhood play will no longer exist. It's hard to argue that it could exist as long as you've already challenged twice or something stupid like that. It does appear that they are, you no longer, if you don't touch the base with the ball in your hand and they call and they review, you will be called safe route. So now Terry Collins, the Mets manager, he connected these two things. Not a lot of people had actually connected the neighborhood play ruling and the takeout slide thing, but he did, and I thought he made a really good point. He said, we're making a slide rule that keeps you on the bag, so you've got to be near the bag, and now we're making a decision on the neighborhood play that says you've got to stay on the bag. You know what that means? It's going to mean, it means someone's going to get their clocks cleaned, and I think that's exactly right. We've basically said the runner now has to stay on the base, but now so does the player, and that feels like almost a refutation of what the takeout slide rule was supposed to fix.
Yes, I actually, come to think of it, I do remember him making those comments, and those are very valid points. And I think the point of making eliminating the neighborhood play is to be fair. I mean, to make sure that the guy touches the base. I have noticed, like in just recent times, maybe the last couple of years, just watching like these neighborhood plays, they're not even close. It's like they're not even anywhere near the bag. They're not sweeping their feet anymore. It's like, so is
but
it
there
so
is
much-
a difference. There is a difference between not being close, and not having to physically make certain that you are holding the ball at the exact second that you're on the base.
That's unfortunate.
It turns it into first base. It turns second base into first base. And right. I don't know if that actually makes the game better. I think it will decrease double plays. And I also think it will turn the game into – I think they're going to – my guess, this is my official prediction, we are going to see by May some clarification on this rule, much like we did with the ball in hand, ball out of glove, what's a catch thing. Because there's going to have to be some sort of clarification on it. Because it doesn't actually – you know, and this is now the third thing. I know we spent so much time hollering about replay and how we had to get replay. We need replay. Robot umps now, and so on. There are now three things that replay has screwed up. There is the ball, getting the ball, what's officially a catch, which is now, you know, basically they've just decided to ignore replay in that regard. Because in the real world, if you really use replay to determine what a catch is, you physically have to, like, show the ball to the umpire, and he has to say out. Otherwise, everything is reviewable because you don't hold the ball for the rest of your life.
Right.
So then now there's this, and there's also the very irritating thing that keeps happening, which is the pop-up slide during the stolen base. If the guy takes his foot off for 1/2 second, and I've always argued for, I think Ben Lindbergh on the Baseball Perspectives podcast, or Sam Miller's one of them, has said that the base should basically extend upward forever, like a skyscraper, like that should be safe. Your foot is on the base, even if it's hovering above the base. It should just go upward, and therefore, if someone tags you and you're still technically on the base up into skyscraper space, you should be fine. That would be a clarification I'd love to have, because I really feel like a lot of this stuff is getting so pedantic and so technically speaking, his foot's off the bag. Technically speaking, he's not touching the ball in the bag at the same time, and it feels like it's all of a sudden it's going to turn into a game that it still feels like baseball, obviously, but I feel like the neighborhood play, while I agree there are times they're not even close – the idea that now every single double play is going to be reviewable on that exact same thing, I don't know how that makes the game more fun.
It doesn't. And they're trying to – I think this is all to speed up the pace of the game, and that's certainly not going to speed it up. And I remember – I think it was the ALCS last year. It was definitely in – yeah, it was in Toronto. And there was that pop-up slide. Somebody challenged it. I think it was Alex Rios. And the manager who challenged it, you could tell he didn't want to do it. You have to challenge it if you get that edge. And so none of the managers want to be doing this. And they have to. I think it's ridiculous. I mean, it's an unfortunate thing that has come out of actually having replay. And most of what replay is bringing us is really good. And it's going to prevent any kind of disastrous things from happening and mistakes being made. But yes, it gets to be like, is this even baseball anymore? And I think it's too bad, but I do think that you're right with some of the stuff that's just come out. Like, there will be clarification and there'll be tweaks made this season, and then we'll have another announcement next off season, and then it'll move on from there.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that people just want to complain. I remember during game 7 of the Royals Giants series, they took a break there was a play in like the second inning where they took a break to make sure they got the call right and do replay, and everybody complained. It's like, wait, no, this is literally why we have it. It's game 7.
Right.
Like, it's game 7. This is the reason that we have replay. Maybe it's annoying in like mid August when it's Reds Brewers, but now it totally matters. So
absolutely. That's why it's there.
Yeah. And so the third thing, speaking of pace of play, which is to me, you know, Joe Sheehan, who we've talked about on the podcast before, I'm a very big fan of his baseball writing. He said he did not believe that Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball would be serious about pace of play until they cut down on the breaks between innings, therefore upsetting television partners by saying you can't play more commercials, you can't have more commercial breaks. Lo and behold, they actually did it. They actually have cut it down. I never thought this would happen. To me, this is actually the – now I believe them. Like, I actually do believe that Rob Manfred is serious about cutting down the pace of game, because, frankly, that is, I think, the exact – let's find the exact number. I've got the exact number. They've cut it down to basically – I'm going to get the exact number. They've shortened the between the inning times. It was 2:25 between for local games, 2:45 for national. It's now 2:05 for local games and 2:25 for national. I know that seems silly. That's 20 seconds here and there.
That's huge.
It comes out to about 5.5 minutes a game.
Yes.
And that is not nothing. That is actual commercial time.
Right.
It's actually television advertising time. To me, I think you can no longer argue just that Manfred and baseball takes this really seriously to get these games down, because they're actually cutting into ad revenue now.
Yeah, no, I think and I think it's a good thing. I thought that was more for the managers going out to the mound, that they have to keep it in the same amount of the same window, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's too. But like now, but that's the point though, is that still, like if they're back, like baseball, the networks will always sneak in as many ads as they can. And now, and so don't get me wrong, as a consumer, I'm a little concerned the networks will say, screw it, we'll just miss the first pitch, which I would not put past them. But certainly that's something I thought they would never touch. I thought it would all be these things on the margins, and they put it on the players, they put it on the managers, and now they're putting it on the broadcasters. And I have to say, I was legitimately impressed by that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just the time in between innings has gotten so out of control. I mean, it didn't used to be like that. Even nationally televised games, it was something reasonable. It has been added. Minutes have been added over the years, and it drives you nuts. But that's why a World Series game can almost not be completed in under 4 hours,
because
the commercial breaks are so long. So yeah, so that was very encouraging for those of us who are actually working these games. I don't think that the general public really cares about that. But yes, the light bulb went off in my head for sure.
Yeah, and like anything you can do, like, you know, I mean, this is one of the things that Manfred said since he first took over commissioner, is he's trying to, you know, he's worried about young people not watching the game. And listen, I don't think a young person is going to be like, wow, it's 2 hours and 57 minutes rather than 2 hours and 59 on average. I think I'll give this game a shot. But I do think every little thing helps.
It's the more of just keeping things flowing. I mean, you could lose someone's attention span by having the extra 20 seconds at a commercial break. It doesn't seem like that. But I mean, look, I was watching the Oscars last night and I was like really kind of on my phone reading Twitter. And then I realized that I was missing like half the things that were going on. And that's what people are doing. They're watching TV, but they're really not. It's sort of background noise now. And so the attention spans are shrinking. I kind of like this. Keeping things moving. And when you keep things moving, it keeps things interesting.
Yes. And listen, I am on the wrong side of history of this. I would be perfectly, when I'm in a baseball game and if I'm not working, I would be happy for the game to go 6 hours. It's better than doing anything else I would be doing that day. But
it's totally, I don't think this has anything to do with people that are actually at the games. I think it's people that are actually watching the games too.
Yeah, I agree. And well, I guess up until the 7th, because then they stop beer sales. So I guess it went 6 hours to the 7th, and then they got to fly by after that. Okay. So now we should. So that was good. Those are the new interesting rules. I think it's fascinating to see how it's going to turn out. But I think we can both agree they're going to do something about that replay of the neighborhood play. Because I think I agree with you. They should do something. They have to be close to the bag. But man, I hate it when it turns into football and the knee down and all that stuff. And,
nitpicking, as they say.
The picking of nits. That's correct. Okay, so let's go to – now we're going to look at the NL West. We looked at the NL East last week. I wrote a column last week. It's funny because you tweeted out our podcast saying that, like, I think I disagreed with Will. I like the Mets and he likes the Nationals, but I'm probably wrong. And I just spent, like, the last 5 hours getting yelled at by Mets fans. So I was like, no, save yourself, Allison. No, stick with the Mets. Stick with the Mets. So now we're going to see if we can do that in the National League West. So let's start first off, last place. Who do you have in last place in the NL West?
I have the Colorado Rockies.
Colorado Rockies. A pretty safe bet. Pretty safe bet for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at them and it's like, okay, they didn't sign any starting pitchers, and I don't blame them. So this is not being accusatory in anything I'm about to say, because I think that they just have so many extra problems that no other team has to deal with. So they didn't sign any starting pitchers. So they're just looking to basically develop their own. Which they've been trying to do for years, obviously. And it could be an interesting rotation. I mean, definitely if Chatwood and Lyles can put together healthy seasons, they've got De La Rosa, Chad Bettis. So they have some interesting guys. But what they did was they added, and I think we've talked about this, they added relievers as if they were a contending team. They added some veteran guys.
Jason Mott,
Yeah, and Chad Qualls. And so it's sort of interesting, like, that they might have a little bit more confidence in the rotation than I do, that they think that there might actually be some games to hold and nail down at the very end.
Yes.
Yeah, and they've always had like a good offense, and of course they're going to continue to do that. And there are discrepancies from the home and road, and that's not over yet. That's still a thing. But they just, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like they have any kind of like set direction, and they sort of just stayed the course this off season, and they're kind of in a transition time. And I don't know. I don't see anybody being worse than them in the division.
Yeah, and I feel like long term, I guess next 5 years, I would actually feel better about Colorado than, say, San Diego. We'll get to San Diego, I suspect, very soon. But Colorado's got a pretty good farm system in a way they haven't for a long time. They've got some good pitching. They've got a great shortstop prospect coming. There are good people that are just down the line, which to me speaks more to they need to push even harder to trade Carlos Gonzalez. Because I feel like that is, he's a good hitter, but he's not, he has huge home road splits. It feels like he's a little brittle. He's one bad injury season away from really having very little trade value at all. Then
Absolutely.
the next Rockies team is not that farther away. And again, I generally, there's an ongoing discussion of what works in Colorado. Why is it so different in Colorado? I still am of the belief, you can't tell me that if you didn't put the Cubs in Colorado, that team would not win 95 games. Like, I think people psych themselves out a little bit sometimes because Colorado is such a different environment. I think they've got talent coming in. I think they actually may have a brighter future than give them credit for, but I think that's all the more reason to shit, like, build around Arenado. Build around Arenado. See what you've got with LeMahieu, but like, get Gonzalez out of there, get Blackman out of there. You've got some young talent. Trade those guys while you can, and build your team around what looks like some good talent coming in. But the point is, definitely in this division this year, they're going nowhere.
No, they're
So.
definitely going nowhere. And, oh my God, the division is just getting better.
It
I mean,
is. And I feel bad because there's always bad news about Colorado. I do think there's more hope for Colorado than there has been in a while. There is good stuff coming. But
I
not this year.
guess.
Not this year. Not this
Yeah,
year.
the Diamondbacks decided to be good. Like, hey, let's make our team good. So, now they have three teams that are good, and it's just going to keep getting. I don't know that I don't have any answers for Colorado. I guess I don't know. That's good to hear that you think that they have a good farm system that they might. It's just been like 10 years
I
since.
know. I think the advantage Colorado has, and we'll get to Arizona, is Arizona is playing that, they're selling out the future a little bit already for a team that frankly doesn't look to me like, if you're a great team, I understand doing that. The Diamondbacks don't seem quite to that level to me yet, and we'll get to them in a second. So for me, the Diamondbacks are not really building something that looks as lasting to where so it could be an opportunity for the Rockies. The Dodgers are obviously not going away. And the Giants are always going to have a lot of money. But I do feel like the Padres, and we should talk about them now, the Padres and the Diamondbacks are maybe going to be a little shaky over the next 4 or 5 years. And I think that could give a window for Colorado. But that window is definitely not 2016. So we'll talk about it in the 2018 podcast. So why am I getting so ahead of myself? So I'll go
I'll
for
mark
I'll,
it down.
yes, exactly. I'll go over the next one. I've got fourth. I do have San Diego fourth. They seem to be in this weird halfway in, halfway out situation. I like they certainly made some good trades. Trading Kimbrel was smart, and that was actually turned out to be a pretty good deal for them. There's still some extra stuff on this team that the fact is their offseason last year was a nightmare, and they're still suffering the ramifications of it.
Yeah, no, I don't. They have an interesting rotation. Like, that's my note on them. They have an interesting rotation. I'm not sure that I trust what they're doing in the front office right now, and I don't know that they, again, I don't know that they have a direction either. But we're looking at like this season, and this season they're going to be a very, very mediocre, pedestrian, bland team, in my opinion. I don't see anybody. James Shields, it's like he doesn't even stand out to me that much anymore. They got John Jay, Melvin Upton, Matt Kemp. I mean, that's a pretty good outfield. But it just seemed like they did so many things to tweak that roster last year, and then they kind of cleared out a little bit of the farm system, and they got some of it back in the Kimbrel trade. I mean, they definitely replenished it, but I don't know. It's just disappointing to me because I just don't feel like they've had any like good decision-making processes in a very long time, starting with firing their manager and then like thinking that they need to reinvent the wheel, and then it didn't work. And so now what are they doing? What are they doing?
Well,
What are they doing?
it's
Well, tell
funny
me.
because last year, when they made all those trades, I think there was a lot of questions like, this isn't building. The team looked
No.
weird. They had like four corner outfielders and no real infield, but they certainly brought in a lot of talent. And I think people had frankly gotten so bored of the Padres for such a long time that they wanted to praise the moves just because he was doing something. He was trying something. He was doing something a little different. But now, to me, the problem is, A, that clearly did not work. And now, you know, now it's the moves were so all in that Preller basically has to – it's going to take him 2 or 3 years just to fix the mess that he made last year. And I think that's
– Did he need to make it?
Yeah,
did
that's
he need to make that mess?
Well, yeah, but people liked it. I think a lot of people – I don't know if they liked the moves, but they were excited by the moves. They seemed – you know, I remember that there was a a common response was, wait, so the Padres can just do that? They could just bring in Myers and they can bring in Kemp and they can bring in Upton and they can, and it felt like they were the Padres, who usually made no moves, all of a sudden were making all of these moves. And I think, I don't know if there was necessarily universal praise for each move, but I do think people at least wanted to praise them for trying something. The problem is it clearly didn't work. And now you have to, I guess if you're going to fail, that's the way to do it.
I don't agree with that. Well, I don't agree with that at all. Because, and this is the reason I don't know. I mean, I'd have to look back to see like what the prospects are doing that they traded. I mean, it wasn't just that they went out and spent $150 million of the owner's money. Like, I don't care if you want to do that. Go for it. But when you're like doing things like sacrificing so much in your farm system and you are the Padres, you don't have like, you know, this unlimited bank account to just be able to fix all of your mistakes. I mean, you're not the Yankees. Like, okay, well, we screwed up with this $30 million contract and it doesn't affect them. So, I mean, I don't get like getting rid of all of that minor league talent, and maybe those guys aren't going to turn out to be anything, but no,
I mean, you're right. I agree with you, but I also feel that I'm just saying there was praise for them for doing it because he went all in. The Padres never go all in. This is kind of the fundamental thing of their franchise is they just kind of this, they're their color. They're this beige tan kind of dull thing. And I love the Padres colors, by the way. I mean, no offense to the, I wish they'd bring back the old uniforms, but I do feel like it didn't work. And the reason I say the way they do it is in a career management aspect, your first year, you just screw up. Then now you're like, okay, I gotta rewind. Let's try this again. And now he's probably got 2 or 3 years to rebuild it back up until they expect him to contend again. So there was a couple months of excitement until they actually played games, which is frankly more than the Padres have had in 10 years. So it's a period.
Maybe I'm just jaded because I've been around an organization who kind of neglected the farm system, I guess is a nice way of saying it. It didn't have a whole lot of talent. It's not just 2 or 3 years. I mean, that can set you back way longer than that. But that, I really need to study more if I'm going to make these opinions just about how their drafts have been in the last few years. And maybe they have had, maybe they still have a lot of talent that they kept. So
I don't know. I think probably more people are on your side than mine. So yeah, I think you're probably okay. Okay. So who do you have third? So those are the two teams that I think is generally considered. I like the idea. We discussed this last time, but basically there are 6 teams in baseball that no one thinks has any chance to win the World Series this year, and they're all in the National League, and there's basically 2 in each division. So we've gone over those 2. So who do you have third in this division?
I have the Diamondbacks.
You do? So do I.
Yeah. I say that thinking that they could still win a lot of games. I just don't think that they're quite ready to be in there with the Dodgers and the Giants. Greinke and Miller, I mean, I'm so, not just me, but most of us, but the starting rotation and having those big arms at the top of the rotation, I mean, that can mask a lot of other deficiencies in other places. And the fact that they have Tyler Clippard and Brad Ziegler in the back of their bullpen. So the only thing that is stopping me from really being on board with them is that I'm just not really enamored with their lineup in any way, shape, or form. They have some very good hitters, but there's still a lot of just mediocrity in that part of the game. But Greinke and Shelby Miller, you know how high I am on him. I think he's going to have a huge year. And I like the rest of the rotation and Corbin De La Rosa and Roy. I say that I think they're going to finish third, but not because they're a third place team, but just because I think the Dodgers and the Giants are going to be fighting it out at the top.
Yeah, I think, it's funny. In a lot of ways, Arizona is not to the extreme that San Diego did last year, but they're doing a little bit what they did. They're saying, let's try to do this now. Let's get Greinke. Let's trade. There are a ton for Shelby Miller. This Cardinal fan is banging his head against the wall to think of what you could have traded Shelby Miller for after losing Hayward. So they got a ton for Shelby Miller. The worry with them, you're right, is that rotation. Is the lineup. They're counting. Yes. Obviously, Goldschmidt's great, but you're counting on Tomas to be more than we've seen from him. You're counting on Pollock, who was great last year, to continue to be great. You're counting on Peralta, who had a very nice year last year, but are we sure he's that guy? you know, that's that. It feels like they have, you know, counting on Gene Segura, who I kind of, you know, I mean, he has fallen off the table the last couple of years. If the Diamondbacks are a team, if everything falls exactly right, particularly in that lineup, they're going to, La Russa and Stewart are going to look like geniuses.
Yes.
But you're counting a lot on Pollock and Peralta. Peralta and Tomas are really, and Castillo even in a lot of ways, you're counting a lot on those guys to have the years they did last year, even a little bit better. And I don't know. I just don't see it. So I don't see it enough to see if they were in the, it's funny. We mentioned they wouldn't be a third place team. I would argue they would be third in the NL East. Mm-hmm. And they would be, would you put them, do you think they're better? We haven't talked to the NL Central yet, but do you think they're better than say Pittsburgh?
No.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either. So, for me, that's the issue with them. I think the Giants have made a big step forward. The Diamondbacks are a lot better than they thought, and they've been very aggressive. And again, we should generally reward that. And this brings me back to the Padres idea. I don't want us in a year to be like, oh, look what the Diamondbacks did. They traded away all their farm system to try to make a go for it this year. Because if it doesn't work for this year, they're basically the Padres next year.
Yeah, that's true. They could be. I do think that the quality of the players that the Diamondbacks acquired is, yes, like light years ahead, that's of the true, quality of the, that's players true, that the Padres acquired a year ago. I, yes, mean, there's not even a comparison there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah. But okay, so we'll go. So second, do you have San Francisco or do you have the Dodgers?
Who I got the Dodgers second.
Wow, you and I are going to battle about the Dodgers forever. I am such a wonk for the Dodgers. So tell me why you have the Dodgers second and the Giants first.
I have the Dodgers second because I don't like their rotation. I get it. Yeah, they are a very, very deep team. They do have a lot of depth. They do have a lot of, well, if this doesn't work out, then we'll go with this. And that is such a huge, important part of being a contending team. I am looking at the rotation and I'm like, okay, no. This is not going to work. And when you take Greinke out of the equation and you replace him with Scott Kazmir and Maeda and Anderson, I think it's going to be decent. I think it's going to be durable. But I don't think that this is not going to work. And if one of these guys, I mean, because you're talking about Ryu, is not going to be even available until May. And they do have a couple of young arms that are coming through. They have that one really like flamethrower, that young guy, who could, you know, come up and help them. So I'm not saying that this is the rotation they're going to end the season with, but when I say that, and I know I haven't gotten the Giants yet, but I think the Giants could, that rotation could also either be like amazing or a complete disaster. So we'll get to them in a second. But at this point, I'm just not that enamored with the Dodgers.
Yeah. See, the thing I love about the Dodgers, the reason I have them first, is that depth that you're talking about. And
yeah,
they have depth. It's funny. It's why I don't think they're as good as the Cubs, because the Cubs are also deep in that way, except they have more superstar depth.
Yes.
I think the Cubs rotation is a little over. It's not the Cubs rotation is not as deep as their lineup is. But I don't know if anything in all of baseball is as deep as the Cubs lineup is right now. But I don't want to talk about the NL Central yet, because I'm going to start crying. So let's stick with the NL West. For me, that is the thing with the Dodgers. They are versatile at everywhere. If Puig doesn't work out, you've got Turner, you've got Ethier, you've got Seager, you've got all these guys in all these other spots that they can fill in. And the same thing is true in the rotation. The idea, I mean, look at their bench, for crying out. They've got Utley, Crawford, Guerrero, and Van Slyke on the bench. Plus, you've got Enrique Hernandez. You've got all of these guys. Elian Herrera is hanging around there. They've got all of these guys that can fill in. And their lineup right now, I would argue, already every spot 1-8 is at least an above average player.
Yes. I agree. Yeah,
I think that's, and when it comes to the rotation, I think the idea is you've got Kershaw, so obviously that buys you some there. And I think their plan with the rotation, again, it worked last year. Like, it worked last year. And mind you, they had Greinke, but it did work last year. You had guys like Brett Anderson. Yeah, you know, Kazmir is that kind of guy this year. Maeda is that guy. I think the mistake that I think sometimes make when they underrate the Dodgers, people underrate the Dodgers sometimes, is they look at them the way that we would look at a team going into a postseason series. Where we would see, oh, they've got Kershaw, but then after that they don't have much. You know, they have no superstar major, though I think Adrian Gonzalez is consistently underrated over and over and over. But he's not superstar to the Harper, you know, Donaldson, Trout level. But so to me, that's the key for the Dodgers, is they're good – everywhere, and they're a good bench, and they've got a lot of moving parts. And oh yeah, by the way, they have billions of dollars that they can use if they actually fall short of something. And what many consider one of the best two or three prospects bases in baseball. To me, this is the fear. I think the thing with the Dodgers is they're about. Like, there's a little part of me that thinks we're going to have Dodger Cubs in LCSs for, like, the next 3 or 4 years. Because the Dodgers appear very primed to do it. And maybe this is the year the Giants hold them off, and I think the Giants are right there with them. But I think eventually the Dodgers are overtaking everybody.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I agree with, yeah. Like, sentiment. I mean, I can see where that could absolutely – everything that you said could absolutely happen. I just don't think that they did even close to enough to replacing – Greinke, and I think that I don't think Scott Kazmir is going to be really good for over the course of a full season. The bench players that you mentioned, like, oh, that you got all these guys can fill in. The only thing I thought was like, oh, those guys used to be really good.
Yeah, I know. That's why they're not starters. That's why they're not starters.
Right.
But yes, and listen, I do like the Giants, and not just because it's 2016, though, of course, it has to be mentioned every time we're talking about. I feel like Brandon Belt is so underrated. He's such a good player, yes. And he just never gets talked about. Joe Panik, he was hurt a lot last year, but he's really nice. Crawford, also really underrated. Like, it was funny. The thing that people kind of missed about the Giants last year is their offense was what carried that team. Their offense was we're so used to the Giants having this great starting pitching. To me, that's actually my fear about them, though, is I think they may have overcorrected. They saw their rotation as this issue. I'm not. Like, listen, if Jeff Samardzija pitches like he did before last year, yeah, the Giants may very well win this division. I'm not sold on that. I'm just not sold on him. And the problem with him, or the problem with a guy like Cueto, who, again, is a terrific starter, but it can be inconsistent, has had his weird kind of moments. And Bumgarner, frankly, is thrown 200 innings for 3 or 4 straight years now. Not to say he's a very healthy guy. He seems to be in good shape. But, you know, pitchers, this is around the time a pitcher like Bumgarner gets hurt. I'm not saying he specifically gets hurt, but traditionally pitchers like him, this is when they start to show a little bit of wear and tear. And that's my fear of the Giants, is their offense is going to be just as good as it was last year. I just think the pitching may not be there again. But it's hard to say that when you look at Bumgarner and Cueto at 1-2. That's a better 1-2 than the Dodgers have, no question. But I can see if one of those guys gets hurt, they don't have the ready fill-in the way that the Dodgers.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And that's why I say it could be like really excellent or a complete disaster. Cueto and Samardzija definitely are. They're taking huge risks. And like, again, they're basing it on what these guys have done, not necessarily what they think they're going to do. I just think that if you have Pence and Panic as healthy players, and like you said, their offense has been so amazing. I'm picking the Giants on the assumption that Cueto and Samardzija are going to be good. So,
they've been very good. Yeah.
But I sort of think that they're not going to be very good. But then I don't think that the Dodgers are going to be very good either.
Listen, so just say 2016. It's 2016 that we're in the World Series. We all know it. So
yeah, in the NL West, I'm picking the team that might stink the least, which is silly because these are really good teams. Yes. These are great teams.
They're not perfect, but they're all good teams.
No, everyone has their issues and everyone has their question marks. But again, I just look at that Dodgers rotation and I'm like, I don't even think, like, if given health for all these guys, I don't think that they're going to be as good as the Giants given health for all those guys. So I don't know. I think it's going to be the most fascinating division in baseball. I really do.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks certainly threw a little wrench into it to make it more interesting, no question. All right, well, here's all my only advice for we have for us here is if I put on Twitter, when I promote this podcast on Twitter and I say, hey, looks like I picked the Dodgers, don't retweet and say, oh, I may regret this, but I picked the Giants. Save yourself, because I will have already been yelled at by a bunch of Giants fans probably for a long time. So save yourself, make it be free and enjoy. All right, well, Allison, have a wonderful time out there. You're going to Arizona when?
I'm going to Arizona on Thursday.
What do you like? Do you prefer Arizona? You prefer Arizona to Florida, don't you?
I prefer Arizona. I prefer anything to Florida.
Yeah, I prefer the crust of the surface of the sun. I prefer.
Non-planet
Pluto.
I know. I shouldn't say that. Florida, there's some wonderful, it's funny because it's the part of Florida that I had to be in for all those years. But when I'm down, I've spent a lot of time in Bradenton, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Here in Port St. Lucie, I like it here. I mean, there's other areas that are a little bit less chaotic than Central Florida. So, but yes, the difference is that when I go to Arizona, I have one hotel and I stay there the whole time. So exactly. I am on my fifth hotel and I've only been here.
Oh, that does sound chaotic. Yeah. All right. Well, good luck. We will talk next week. I don't know what division we'll do, but we'll look at another, probably in the American League this time. We'll look at another division next week. But I'll see you in Arizona. I won't see you in Arizona, but we'll talk in Arizona and we'll have a great time. And we are getting close now. I can sense it. It is getting, we're talking about rule changes and baseball, major league teams losing to college teams. There are actual games happening. It's all coming together.
Good times.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, as always.
Thanks, Will.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks, as always, to Allison Futter, the national correspondent for MLB.com. Of course, follow her on Twitter at Allison Futter, AllysonFootter. This has been the Willich Experience Podcast, Footer and Leach Edition. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We're going to be back actually later this week talking to Howard Begdahl, writer of the new book, The Cardinal Way, which, boy, I won't get yelled at all for promoting that one on Twitter. Come back later on this week. I'll talk to you then. Be safe.